all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, January 24th. I am Pat Kreitlow, and there's Aaron Zommers over there in our station back in Madison. I'm here on Lake Wissota in beautiful Chippewa Falls. And we're going to talk later this hour about how dozens of Wisconsin farmers visited their state legislators recently to outline their priorities and basically their to-do list if the Wisconsin legislature really wants to show its support for farm families and the rural economy. We will talk to Michelle Ramirez-White from Wisconsin Farmers Union, as well as our friend Hans Breitenmoser, to tell us a bit more about what these farmers were telling their state lawmakers in Madison and what they'll be telling them over the next few months here as they craft a legislative agenda. Tomorrow on the show, we will be talking to Sarah Godlewski, former state treasurer, and Jody Habish-Sinikin, a candidate for state senate in a special election in the Milwaukee area. So you'll want to join us for that segment. That'll be tomorrow morning at 7:30. In sports, the Badgers lost. They had that makeup game with Northwestern that got postponed over the weekend. The Badger men lost 66-63. There were 16 lead changes in the second half, but in the end, the Badgers made one of their final 10 shots from the field at the end of the game and fell by 3 to Northwestern. The Bucks, meanwhile, are back firing on all pistons, pun intended, as they decimated Detroit last night, 150-130. Because Giannis is back in the lineup. 20 of his first 29 points were scored in the first quarter. And Chris Middleton was back in the lineup. The two haven't played together in more than a month. And now are playing off the same page on the same court once again, which is fantastic news for any Bucks fans. You can reach us at 844-967-2789. We covered many topics in our first hour around everything from immigration and human trafficking to, you know, mass shootings to the priorities of our legislators. And we always welcome your calls on what's on your mind today, or send us a note, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. You can also follow us at UpNorthNewsWI on social media. Among the stories that were posted up recently was one of our freelance writers ranking Wisconsin's five biggest indoor water parks if you just rank them by the count of water slides. Which, look, if you're a younger person, the more slides you can run back and forth to, the better. Did I say run back and forth? I shouldn't say that, because I've got grandsons that how many times in the water park I'm like, don't run, walk.
Yeah, that's a bad plan.
The 3-year-old, he has already developed the Kreitlow passive aggressive sense of humor that he kept getting yelled at for running by a hotel pool a couple of weeks back. And he gets out and he's about to start running, and he hears me, he hears his grandma, he hears his mom all saying, walk. And what does that little guy do? He starts taking these very slow but very big steps, very wide steps, so slowly. I'm like, you little such and such, you know, he's learning. He's learning, and God bless him for it. Also at the UpNorthNewsWI.com website, Wisconsin has a new program to support survivors of human trafficking. In Wisconsin, there were 95 cases of human trafficking involving 166 people. But again, those are just the ones that were reported. And so you can learn more about that by checking out our site, upnorthnewswi.com. Some good news on the labor scene. More than 1,000 CNH industrial workers who've been on strike since last May in southeast Wisconsin approved a new contract on Saturday with the maker of tractors, bulldozers, backhoes, and other heavy equipment. Folks might know it better as either Case or New Holland, but now known as CNH. The United Auto Workers Union said that the union members in Racine and in Burlington, Iowa, approved the deal. That comes 2 weeks after they rejected an earlier agreement. The union did not disclose any details of what was in the contract. Previously, the company said that their final offer, the one that was rejected a couple weeks back, included raises of 28 to 38% over a four-year period. Throughout the strike, workers were fighting for raises that would cover inflation and that wouldn't be consumed by increases in health insurance costs. Before the walkout started, workers had rejected a deal with 18% raises because of those concerns. And the other concern amongst those thousands of employees was simply that, you know, the profits for the company, just in the third quarter alone, the profits were $559 million, a 22% increase. So it's not like the company didn't have that. It was a matter of, are the workers being fairly compensated and being treated right for the work that they're doing, making high quality equipment in the American Midwest that is selling well? And so it was a very rough strike for those workers. The company played hardball, and in the end, there has been that settlement. And again, we don't know the details, but just based on what didn't get passed, we have to assume it's maybe a little bit better, and that they did right by the workers. And that's the important thing, is that these are folks that can get back on the job. Again, manufacturing in Wisconsin and Iowa, the thing that we do well, have always done well, when companies actually commit to building in the United States and commit to their American workforce. We'll talk about some other headlines, including Republicans still prepping for their national convention in Milwaukee in 2024, right after they figure out who's going to lead the Republican Party. Coming up, you're up north.
Dust at heaven.
What do we got here, Aaron?
This is Just Like Heaven from the Cure's MTV Unplugged live performance.
Oh, nice. Now I got something else to put on my music to-do list, because I like the song, but I am pretty sure I've not heard the Unplugged version, because again, MTV Unplugged went away like a generation ago.
Yeah, I know I haven't heard this one either.
All right, very nice. Hey, there are many ways to listen or even watch what we do. You can watch Up North News Radio online through Facebook. You can either go to Up North News Facebook page or go to the Facebook page of Bull Falls Radio out of Wausau. The other way is to go to civicmedia.us, the homepage for the Civic Media Radio Empire. And there you can see all the stations across Wisconsin. You can see all the shows that are on the various Civic Media stations. And if you go click on a show, you will see a listing of all of our recent episodes, because each hour is then loaded up as its own separate podcast. So our 6 a.m. hour is a podcast, the 7 a.m. hour is a separate podcast, and you can either listen there or you can subscribe at Apple, Spotify, all the usual places. And again, you'll find those links at the civicmedia.us page. Civic Media is also giving away $1 million in advertising time to local businesses all across Wisconsin. That is a promotion that begins in just 2 days and 2 hours for those of you listening live. 9 o'clock Thursday morning is when you can fill out the appropriate application and then get more help on not only free advertising, but free help designing an advertising campaign to promote your business. It is quite a jolt of economic impact coming from one radio station group. And I know they're very proud to be doing that. So again, if you're a small business with any interest, go to civicmedia.us/million and get all the details. You can also listen to us on the Civic Media app, and you can always call us here at the studio, 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. As we know, the Republican National Convention in 2024 is going to be held in Milwaukee. It is a rather passive-aggressive choice by a Republican Party that has openly hated the city of Milwaukee for I would dare say, generations now. And how do we know that that's still the case? Well, I would point you to yesterday's discussions on this program about remarks made and emailed by Bob Spindell, who is chair of the 4th Congressional District Republican Party in the Milwaukee area, where they were bragging, essentially, about suppressing the turnout of Black and Hispanic voters this past November, because they couldn't sell Republicans, or they couldn't sell voters on the Republican Party or Republican ideas or Republican candidates. So simply by using enough attack ads and smearing Democrats, that led a lot of voters to say, well, I guess I won't bother voting at all. That's essentially what they want to do for Milwaukee, is attack its schools, not allow it to grow and thrive, to take care of its transportation and parks and what have you. And yet the National Party is going to come to Milwaukee, they say, to shine a spotlight on the city. I don't believe I'm being too cynical at all when I say I think they're actually going to spend a lot of time putting a negative spotlight on the city, saying, you know, look at this crime and look how much better we could do if only we were in charge. But again, you know, their ideas and candidates aren't getting the kind of support that they need. But before any of this can happen with the 2024 convention, two things have to happen at the top of the party. They have to determine who is going to be the nominee of the party. Is it going to be Donald Trump? If it's not going to be Donald Trump, how much of a scorched earth campaign is going to take place prior to the Milwaukee convention for that poor person who's going to end up being the nominee whose name isn't Donald Trump? So that's the one that everybody already knows about. But there's also the party itself, the Republican National Committee, the RNC. The National Republican Party is about to elect a new chair, or re-elect the current chair whose term is up. And there are some, you know, there are some Republicans very concerned about how bitter the debate has become, showing off their divisions, and whether the party will be able to recover from that. The incumbent, Rona Romney McDaniel, faces opposition from a California lawyer, Harmeet Dhillon, and of course, Mike Lindell, the CEO of MyPillow. The latter two candidates, big supporters of Donald Trump. And again, in the stories here, her name is listed as Rona Romney McDaniel, but she was using Romney, her maiden name, prominently. She is related to Mitt Romney and basically stopped using it when Donald Trump continued mocking her. So Donald Trump made this woman essentially change her name. She has been leading a Republican Party that has not done well, quite frankly, in places where they can't rig the maps. They lost ground in 2018. They lost ground in 2020. They did not win the Senate in 2022. And so there are a lot of people that think that Rona McDaniel needs to go, that there needs to be new leadership. However, the other two candidates are tied so closely to Donald Trump. You have Dhillon. Her firm represented Trump during the investigations by the January 6th committee. She has called for a fresh direction for the party, although apparently that fresh direction includes Trump. And then, of course, there is Mike Lindell from MyPillow. To put it charitably, it says here he has spread debunked election fraud conspiracies. And again, that really is the kindest way of putting this kind of anti-American behavior of knowingly lying about American democracy and the 2020 elections. And he says that he thinks that this fight over who should be chair of the RNC is actually going to be good for the party, because he suggests that before Kevin McCarthy became speaker, after 15 ballots, he contends that that ordeal, in the end, is good for the Republican Party. I don't really see it that way, but that's how he sees it. And of course, a lot of other Republicans are trying to put on a good face about it. But there is real concern about what the Republican Party can do at the national level with this level of division? Well, that division runs all the way down to the state and local levels. You will recall during the fall of 2022, we passed along a story done by the right-wing news site Wisconsin Right Now that helped expose how a couple of county Republican parties in Wisconsin were essentially being used to funnel cash from the Trump campaign's super PAC, or from a super PAC affiliated with the Trump campaign is probably the more legal way to put that, to get that to the candidate who was challenging Assembly Speaker Robin Voss in last year's primary, because folks in the Republican Party thought that Robin Voss wasn't Trumpy enough, and that these county parties faced some real division about what they should do about the money that was they were being asked to shift around and the leadership. And now you have a new article from this morning in the New York Times talking with the headline, "Will the Real GOP Please Stand Up? A National Power Struggle Goes Local." And the story, it says, is about one deep red pocket of rural Pennsylvania where three warring factions each claim to represent the Republican Party. The tensions boiled over in a scuffle over a booth at a recent farm show. That's the point that the party is getting at. If you are one of those folks that believes that our country would be better served, not just with a third party, but a fourth party and a fifth party, so that there could actually be coalitions built, as in the UK and you know, Israel and other democracies, you know, around the country where they're, you know, we're the only one, as far as I can tell, that has two major parties with no hope whatsoever at this point for a third, much less a third, fourth, fifth party to emerge that makes it necessary to have coalitions and try to get voters to support you based on what you want to do with these other partners, because you might find agreement on, say, tax policy, but you might disagree on environmental policy. Well, the only way you're going to get power is to work together and come to a decision about, well, are we going to lead with this or are we going to lead with that? Well, in the Republican Party right now in the U.S., you have that division over, you know, who won the 2020 presidential election. You have the struggle over whether Kevin McCarthy should have been the House Speaker. Of course, you have the national leadership of the Republican Party. And all of these things, the Times article says, are likely to shape state parties' ability to raise money, recruit candidates, settle on a 2024 nominee for president, and generally chart a path out of the party's post-Trump presidential malaise, it says here. Now, I will be fair to tell you that Democrats will face the exact same challenge, whether Biden runs for a second term or not, and every indication is that he will, but whether it's in 2024 or 2028, we saw what the setup was like in 2020 with many candidates getting varying levels of support, but no single one of them really emerging. And the question becomes, you know, once the Democratic Party has to move past Joe Biden, will they coalesce, or will they, again, will there be, you know, a left and a moderate schism there? But it is not nearly as apparent and public right now the way that it is at in the Republican Party, all the way down to local parties where there are tensions that are flaring because of people that want the Republican Party to continue the big lie, continue to basically attack voter rights, attack democracy, follow like a Carrie Lake in Arizona, who is still out there saying this wackadoodle stuff about how she won and eventually she'll be declared the winner, and that Katie Hobbs, who actually did win the election, will be removed from office. And again, it's that kind of fantasy party that, you know, plenty of other Republicans are saying to themselves, get off my side. And they're getting louder about it. In Michigan as well, Democrats did extremely well But in part, it was because Michigan Republicans were really breaking up into various factions, too. So the Times has the article today. But again, as we look in Wisconsin toward hosting the Republican National Convention in 2024, we will be following over these next couple of years, not just who's going to be the Republican Party's nominee, but who's going to be the Republican leadership. And then, frankly, who's going to want to say they're in the Republican Party once all the dust settles? We'll talk to a couple of folks about Wisconsin Farmers Union and Wisconsin's rural economy in just a bit. This is Up North News Radio. We'll be back. Just like never.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Beautiful Wisconsin, nature's wonderland.
Aaron, what did you find?
Beautiful Wisconsin by Ken Griffin.
Where does this date from? Holy cow.
1949.
No wonder I missed it. I'm just a little bit too young for that. But all right, keep that in mind. We're going to have to play that in full one of these days. And I'm going to have to look up how you found that. Before we get to our guests, I'll tell you that one of my very favorite things as a state legislator was getting visits by lobbyists. Not the lobbyists you know, with the capital L and the really nice suits, you know, and they send a lot of money around through campaigns at election year. I mean lobbyists with a lowercase L. You know, the folks from everyday life who take the time to come to Madison and talk to their state senator or their state assembly representative, sometimes by themselves, but quite frequently with a group of like-minded folks who want to talk about the real-world impact of the legislation that's being considered. And it was always a treat to get visits from folks associated with Wisconsin Farmers Union, having married into a dairy farm family myself. And those visits took place recently around the state capitol again. As you know, every couple of weeks or so, we talked to our friend Hans Breitenmoser from his farm up in Lincoln County. And this week, he brought along Michelle Ramirez-White from Wisconsin Farmers Union as well to talk about their recent lobby day. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Hans, you doing well up there? I know it's going to get cold this weekend, but you doing all right?
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to cool off a little bit here, but I think we'll manage.
Cool off a little bit. I like that. That's a good way to put it. Hans, you were the one that suggested we should talk a bit about Farmers Union Lobby Day, and you've been a part of these kinds of activities when you talk to legislators. Is it still as important a function as I described it, you know, from, you know, 15 years ago or so? Do the legislators still get something out of it? Do the people that take part still get something out of it? I hope you don't feel like you're just going through the motions here.
No, I don't think so. And again, it is only as good as the people who are participating on both sides of that equation, be they the legislators or the quote lobbyists. I think it's important. I've gone to Lobby Day a few times. It's good for my soul, for starters, to be around good people like Michelle and all the rest of the team at Wisconsin Farmers Union, because there are some pretty important priorities that Farmers Union comes up with. And it's such a grassroots deal. You know, we come up with these legislative priorities really very much at the annual meeting grassroots level. Once they're formulated and so forth, of course, it's staff like Michelle who have to, you know, help get those things coordinated and in front of legislators. But the lobby day itself is important because it gives we farmers a chance to talk with our legislators and so on. And I was happy to go this time. And yes, while sometimes it's very frustrating because we talk with legislators who you know, maybe aren't on the same page on some of these issues, it's still very, very, very important to get in front of these folks and talk to them about what our priorities are. And I feel like it's more education than anything. I know in our experience this time around, I brought two of my children along and we talked with our legislators, and I was glad we went because they were sincerely clueless about some of the things that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And that's legit, you know, because they've got a lot of things to think about. So it was good to be able to help educate the folks that are in fact in positions of making policy.
Oh, and I have to say, I agree with that 100%. A lot of what I got out of it most as a state senator wasn't that, oh, we really need you to vote this way or that way on a bill. It was the stuff that you learn. And you know, as somebody who's a journalist by training, and I wasn't going out and doing news stories as a senator. So when people would help educate me on an issue, I was extremely thankful for that. And, you know, Michelle, we have talked to Hans previously about the various issues that could be discussed: broadband, infrastructure, education, clean water, healthcare, antitrust, you know, anti-monopoly enforcement and things like that. Do you want to sum up for us, was there like a particular priority list of all of those things, or was it just general discussions, as people wanted to talk to their legislators? How were the discussions structured?
Yeah, so we kind of framed it based on our budget priorities going into this session. And then we really encouraged our members to uplift things that they were personally passionate about and find personal stories to connect them. And that's something we're really proud of, is having this organizing department and organizers like Forrest Humphrey on our staff to really train our members to feel comfortable sharing their personal stories and how to frame stories in a really effective way to make legislators further understand what living a rural life would really feel like, or maybe things or aspects of policies that they haven't thought about from the perspective of someone actually living in these areas. So I think from that perspective, that's a much more impactful way of speaking to a legislator than just regurgitating speaking talking points or numbers to someone.
I had done that a couple of times where somebody was nervous. They were just reading off a piece of paper, and we'd say, you know, just tell me about yourself. Tell me what you do. And you get some great conversations out of that. So it sounds like you're really taking good care of your members before you unleash them on all the various legislators out there. One of those former legislators, Sarah Rodriguez, is now the state's new lieutenant governor. And she provided a welcome at the event. And I was surprised a bit to note that this person who had represented the part of the Milwaukee area gave a nod to her grandparents' dairy farming roots. So she is not a stranger to what the legislature has to do to boost Wisconsin agriculture and strengthen the workforce. So Michelle or Hans, did either of you get a chance to talk to the lieutenant governor and hear more about, you know, what she got out of the event?
I did not.
How about you, Michelle?
I did. It was pretty cool. I also didn't know she had this connection to agriculture from her past. And she really, her and her staff really explained how excited she was to be able to come speak to us. It was one of the first events she's done since being the lieutenant governor. And she actually came early and got to mingle with people and really just wanted to be able to sit and chat with the farmers and our membership. And she really emphasized the value of citizen lobbyists in her speech and how much it really meant to see so many farmers coming down, driving down some 4 hours to get to Madison that day. It was awesome.
When Hans, when you and I have talked about you sometimes talk to legislators and, you know, they say the right things, but you don't know if they're really going to be on your side when all is said and done. I note that one of the news reports says that the chair of the State Senate Agriculture Committee, Joan Balwig, Republican, talked to the farmers and said the state is well positioned with a $6.6 billion surplus heading into the budget season. She said a large component of that surplus is one-time money through the federal government. We need to be strategic in how we use those surplus dollars, she said. So again, saying the thing like, we know there's a surplus, it, you know, a lot of good can come from it. But I would imagine, Hans, if you were really trying to get a message to the Republican caucus, it would be to be rather targeted with those dollars as opposed to a one-size-fits-all tax cut.
Absolutely, 100% true. I mean, we've got an opportunity here with this budget surplus. So now it's up to us to, you know, make good use of it. And how can we use those dollars to invest in things that are going to be sustainable long term? You know, we're told again and again that, you know, a lot of those funds came from the feds and they're one-time funds and so forth and so on. And I think it's all the more important to use those funds wisely and use them in a way that invests in things that then can take off from there. And whether that's, additional funding for state meat inspectors so we can sort of help get more small processors going, or, we can talk about healthcare all day long. We've done that plenty of times, but there are, yes, it's, I think it's important when we have budget deficits that we have good policymakers with good heads on their shoulders and are thinking for themselves and not just following the party lines. It's very important when there's a surplus too to make sure that these dollars are invested wisely.
Yeah, either way, it's about money management. Michelle, was there more talk about the budget in particular and dollars that should go to this thing or that thing, as opposed to, just general concepts like healthcare, schools, infrastructure? Is there a lot that Farmers Union is advocating for in terms of, right down to the dollars and cents, or at least the priorities for where budget dollars should go?
Yeah, I think we're really advocating for general priorities. We do have some dollar asks, but again, within Lobby Day, we really tried to just communicate that material via our informational sheets, and we let the members kind of speak to more of the general priority itself and why it would be impactful to them in their area and their community. So I think both.
And it's going to be, again, an important thing that, for those who say, well, we can't just throw money at a problem, that should not be an excuse for throwing $0 at a problem when something can be done. And, Hans, a great example of that would be the meat inspectors. There was also Lieutenant Governor Rodriguez pointed to $100 million that went to the Farm Support Program to double the funding for dairy processor grants, along with $15 million to bolster the meat processing supply chain and workforce. So there are ways, specific ways that the legislature could provide help, if they choose to do so, should I say?
Absolutely. And as I see, my connection is unstable, broadband always comes to mind.
Yes,
as well, because that's a nut that hasn't been completely cracked yet. And I think more and more of the legislators understand, how important it is to get some of these things done. But again, all of this is overlaid on this. Just the politics of it and the issue of having a split government that is so polarized and has made it a priority not to get along versus, solve problems. And so I think that's the wrinkle that gets in the way, more than it should.
Michelle, I'd imagine that if it's not part of the marching orders to your members, I think it's just built in that when they're having these real conversations with legislators, it's about working together wherever possible and not simply letting, an R or a D next to your name, dictate what you do, because farmers, like all the rest of us, have to get along with other people, compromise with other people every day. So I would think your members are in a very good position to remind legislators to act like people and not just robotic politicians.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think we really are. I think that, agriculture is a really special space that feels uniquely nonpartisan, as well as our organization being nonpartisan. It really lets us create those amazing relationships with both sides of the aisle, as well as farmers just being friendly people who are always willing to invite anyone onto their farm. So, yeah.
That part is very true. The farm tours, the farm tours where we've learned about, again, things either involving dairy or nutrient management, which, is a kind way of saying, where's the manure going to go? Especially as these farmers get bigger, there are some very unique environmental concerns. And I know, Michelle, that as much as we want to romanticize the family farm, the reality is that farms have been getting bigger. But again, I would think that your members, even if it's not just the family, if they now have hired hands and workers, I don't think they're any less stewards of the land and have ideas for how you have these larger farms done right.
Yeah, definitely. I think as people grow, it's important to be responsible with how they grow. And I think stewards of the land is a perfect term to use. Continue to care about the environment, about climate change, and about conservation efforts, which are huge priorities for our organization.
Yeah, and always will be. Well, you know, again, whatever size the farm is, and it, again, there's plenty of farm families that want to do right by the land, but again, markets being what they are, they sometimes need financial assistance to do that, especially when markets aren't doing well because of monopolies, which is a topic that we've talked about before, Hans, but we'll do for another day as we've run out of time for this week. But Hans, thank you so much, and Michelle Ramirez-White from Wisconsin Farmers Union, great to meet you. Thanks so much for coming on today as well.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Pat.
Good to see you all. And again, there will be a National Farmers Union fly-in in Washington, D.C. coming up in September. We will talk to Chad Holmes coming up in just a bit, find out what's going to be on his show later on. You're up north.
Honeyland, your home, sweet home to me.
Once again, as we do on most Tuesdays, we talk to the hardest working man in the civic media empire. That would be Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio, who covers plenty of news and things to talk about, as well as all manner of sports. But the man really, gets a gold star in my column for the UW-Eau Claire t-shirt that he's wearing this morning to join us. Chad, how you doing?
Doing good, Pat. How are you doing?
Doing good. It's winter, and we're finding out that we're heading back below zero this weekend for the first time in a while. So I guess I shouldn't complain too much, but I mean, I can handle a lot. I can handle, 100 inches of snow if it never got below zero. And I know other people are the opposite. They're like, I don't mind if it's really cold, but I don't want to move snow, but I'm definitely in the, if you could just keep it above zero, that would be great.
I want a little sunshine.
That's the big thing.
Sunshine lately.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I was looking at one of the Eau Claire TV stations this morning, and they're doing the weather. And you know how they put the maps in motion with their guess of what it's going to do over the next few days. And I'm looking at it, just clouds, 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 clouds. And just as I'm about to give that Jim Carrey kind of, oh, come on, then it gets to Thursday or Friday, we might see the sun again. But of course, as soon as the clouds are gone, as soon as it clears up, there goes the temperature, just goes for a plunge. So it's like, pick your poison. You either get nice temperatures or you get sunshine. You don't get both until April. Welcome to Wisconsin.
And with all the traveling I'm doing with the sports, I'm not a fan of snow.
No, you can't be. My goodness. And then even with the cold, you're lugging equipment around that, you don't need to have that damaged at all. You have been certainly not lacking for sports to cover. We talked to Dan Schumacher, the UW-Eau Claire athletic director, last Friday, and we talked about how this is totally his busy season. He's going from a basketball game to a wrestling meet to a hockey game to what have you. And I get exhausted just scrolling through your Twitter feed at all the places that you're going. You're posting pictures, you're doing broadcasts. How's that been so far this season?
So far, so good. This is a busy week. This is a road week. Some weeks are home weeks. This week's a road week. Like last night, I was up in Minocqua for a girls game. Tonight, I go to Rapids and then go to Stevens Point a couple of times. And then on Saturday, to put the cherry on top, get to go to Hudson for a broadcast.
So, ooh.
Thankfully, I go on the bus. So it's like, don't drive myself.
Oh, that's smart. That's good. Good for you. I did notice that you advertised that one of your topics that you talk about from 2 to 4 p.m. on Bull Falls Radio deals with a special Wausau School District Board meeting where a proposal on school consolidation could be voted on. I'm rather surprised to hear that. I used to hear about school consolidation a lot over the years, especially in rural districts. I'm a little surprised to hear about that in the Wausau area, but maybe I shouldn't be.
The enrollment for the Wausau School District has gone down rather significantly over the years, and there are some issues in terms of equal opportunity between East and West. There's also some issues in terms of basically from the elementary schools right through the high schools. There was that meeting last night. I am going to get a report since I was not able to be there because of my broadcast. But from what I've been told is that no action has been taken yet. Mm-hmm. I discussed it yesterday, and I got a call. And right now, I said it on the program, the hardest part isn't going to be having the plan. They mm-hmm. now have a plan, which would involve closing some elementary schools and also becoming one high school. The hard part is going to get everybody on board. I think yes. the heavy lifting is just about to begin. So that is a story that we're in the middle of. They started with some committee work last summer, and it's continued. And now we're to the point where you have a plan. But now I think the hard part truly does begin.
Oh, without a doubt. And again, it's a very emotional topic for folks, you know, whether it's an elementary school or a high school, people feel invested in it. And yet they're not necessarily the ones who, A, have to wrestle with the decision, and or B, fund it. And that's, you know, so much of this comes down to whether, you know, between the property tax base and state support, are our schools getting the support they need? And if not, you know, that just makes a process like this, you know, that much tougher. You have you've also been talking with Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg last week, Joel Lewis from Citizen Action, of course, our friend Nancy Stensel to talk about, you know, mining and homelessness in the Wausau area. You've really been covering just a lot of ground. I mean, and that's just in the past week.
Yeah, and it's always interesting. Very good people. And in fact, today on the program, I have another person that has been working hard and bringing up important issues within the Wausau City Council, Tom Killian. He's actually mm-hmm. helped push forward a discussion of the homeless issue. We have an issue here in Wausau. So we'll be talking to Tom later on today on the program. But it's an interesting time, I will say that. A lot of issues that need to be discussed, and there's mm-hmm. people that I've had on the program, but there are other people in town as well that may have different perspectives. So it's important to talk about these issues.
I will definitely want to follow up with you on that, because I have been assisting a group here in Chippewa Falls that, you know, Chippewa County hasn't had a homeless shelter for 7 or 8 years now. And so it's been a whole bunch of, you know, hotel motel vouchers, which get really expensive. And so now they've turned toward what's called the tiny house concept. And, you know, these small structures can be put basically on a trailer and taken from place to place. And they've been in church parking lots by and large, but now they're all being brought to a single location so that you don't have the expense of the vouchers. You don't have the expense of maintaining a shelter. People are in their own place temporarily until they can get, you know, back on their feet. And again, I know there's many ways to address the issue that I'm sure you're going to be talking about, because it's not, if there was an easy answer to homelessness, especially in smaller cities like Chippewa Falls and Wausau, we would have come up with it by now, but it's always a little difficult.
And the thing about it is, it's just one issue of a number of issues. Mm-hmm. Again, it's one of those things where we're in this era of limited resources for municipalities, as you well know. Hopefully that's going to be helped in some way during this next session. But again, with limited resources, boy, there's not an easy answer to so many issues.
Well, and one of, you know, tops among that, it, you know, in my mind, is affordable housing. There's the stock of affordable housing is not just an issue in cities like Chippewa Falls or Wausau, but in all of these other communities where it's tough to attract workers if either the houses are, you know, McMansions or, you know, 100 years old and need a lot of work. And then you get into the, you know, job market and everything else. So much to cover, but we're so thankful that you're doing that on Bull Falls Radio, 2 to 4 p.m. Chad, great to visit with you again. I hope you have a great rest of the week.
Thank you, Pat.
All right. Stay warm out there. And again, Sarah Godlewski will join us tomorrow, along with Jody Habersinikin, who is a candidate for state Senate in the Milwaukee area. Right now, Earl Ingram is up next in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay. Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Alba in Richland Center, Wausau and Amory. We'll see you tomorrow.